if ever he calls my name. Gone are your old ideas of life, the old ideas grow dim. Lo and behold, you're someone's wife, and you belong to him. You may think this kind of adventure never may come to you. Darling, 16, going on 17, where just wait a year or two.
So a needle pulling thread.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Oh, boy, a lot of new stuff here. Boy, a lot of news today on the new WHFR Journal. I'm here in the studio. My name is Jay Koronek. I'm here with Dennis Reimar as the WHFR News Director. Good afternoon, Dennis.
Good afternoon, Jay.
Yes.
Let's start with
as you suggested, yes, we've got to use our disclaimer. The opinions expressed on the show upcoming are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. If you've been following the local news and local news about Michigan and what the so-called lame duck session in our Lansing legislature, what's been going on there, it is both breathtaking and for some of you that like it, I find it extremely disturbing. This is not the kind of democracy that I thought I was part of. And this is what happens when you have lame duck sessions. And in fact, I would suggest that after an election, there isn't any legislative session anymore until the new people get in there. That's my humble suggestion. There's plenty of other suggestions out there. I'd like to begin with the New York Times today. Okay, New York Times, all the way over there in New York City. Well, we made page 3 of the Times Digest. In other words, it's a special email edition that is available to print subscribers that takes out the ads. So, boy, I can really read it quick without the ads. Here's a story from this morning's New York Times Digest about Lansing. Bills curbing unions stir clashes in Michigan. Lansing, Michigan, as labor supporters crowded into the Capitol, chanting their dismay, this state's, that is Michigan's, Republican leaders announced on Thursday their intent to swiftly pass limits on unions in Michigan, a state with deep ties to organized labor. And here's a quote from our Governor Rick Snyder. This is all about taking care of the hardworking workers of Michigan, about being pro-worker, about giving them the freedom to choose who they associate with. And yes, I'm using an ironic tone of voice there. I hope it comes across in the radio, because those are all buzzwords that are patently untrue if you actually know what the issues are. Now, supposedly he's explaining why, after 2 years in office, and stating that it would be too divisive to pass right to work, he now is a big supporter and has announced he will sign the bills, and that'll probably happen next Tuesday, probably first thing, 9 a.m. They're not going to be back in session until then again. I don't know, is Monday a holiday? Is it a day off in Lansing? Why not till? Why are they off till Tuesday?
I don't know, we should be grateful.
They usually don't work on Fridays, by the way.
Right.
You know, talk about a part-time legislature. We already have one. So they do all their work. Anyway, as it says here, Thursday night, the House, controlled by Republicans, had approved part of a package of legislation that would bar workers from being required to pay fees to unions. Two similar but separate bills passed the Senate, also held by Republicans. If the entire package of legislation goes through, which could happen as early as next week, Michigan, in other words, they have gone through, as a matter of being signed by the governor now, the birthplace, Michigan, the birthplace of the United Automobile Workers, would become the 24th state in the nation to pass such a ban. And James Settles, Jr., Vice President of UAW, says to do this now is very poor timing. Labor and management, I think it's any time is poor timing. As I said before, I grew up in a union family. I know the exploitation of management over workers, if they're allowed to. I've seen my dad struggle back in the 1950s as part of the UAW and as part of that effort to get equity with the owners, with the employers. Why? Because his workplace, and he had worked with Chrysler Corporation since the 1920s, since he was a little kid, sweatshops, unfair labor practices, unhealthy work conditions. It's basically working in a dictatorship, okay? You say, oh, I don't like dictatorships. I don't like tyrants, Well, private business, and all you private businessmen out there, I know your ears are burning now, and I apologize to your ears, but in effect, you have a few regulations about health and safety now that you have to follow in the state of Michigan. Okay, that's happened in the last 50 years. So there are some standards that you have to follow. But in terms of workers, if there was no union, okay, you can do anything you want to with those workers. You are private. Now, some public institutions have to have, like, hearings or give you notice, just cause notice about why you're being terminated. But you can just be threatened. You can be fired. You can be forced to work extra hours or be fired if there isn't a union. That is the collective force of everybody there at the factory, and the lawyers that their dues are able to pay in order to stand up to the bosses. And some people say, well, they're standing up too much. The bosses can't get any profits from their work. Well, maybe the bosses ought to find a way to work smarter. If you can't respect your workers, okay, you don't deserve the profit. I'm sorry, you don't. If you don't respect the human beings that are actually working for you, you don't deserve any profit at all. Now, that's my humble opinion, of course, and I know many people disagree. But if you, as I've said before, if you look at, and no one ever looks or reads about history, if you look at the history of why unions were first created in democracies, okay, going back 100 years, and you look at the changes and the improvements that have been made in the workplace, only because workers were there and because of the solidarity of workers, that is, yes, a so-called closed shop workplace where everybody must join the union and pay dues and take the benefits from the union contracts, then the bosses can do whatever they want to do and, even dump the company, even kill the company, just so they can resell it, And of course, that means the workers are out of work, and you know, they lose any benefits they have. And this is really frustrating to me. But because you know, and I'm going to keep babbling a second. Dennis is sitting here, but you know, I've heard, oh well, because that union collective bargaining amendment to the Constitution didn't pass, the labor unions lost big. Well, no, it was, 45-55?
Right.
They didn't lose by that much. And most people probably who did vote against that used the argument that probably killed a lot of the other amendments, and that was, you don't want to amend the Constitution of the Constitution of Michigan. That's too radical.
Right, they want legislation.
Right,
exactly.
That's too radical. It doesn't, yeah.
Let's see, what number you want.
Sure, three.
Wow.
Yeah. They're moving things around.
No wonder.
No wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Is that better? Hello? Hello?
I hear something.
Okay.
Dennis, you had a comment?
My comment is that if this passes, what this is giving is it's giving the employees an opportunity. It gives them the choice. So this isn't doing away with unions, but it's giving them the choice whether they want to join or not, because right now they're forced to join and pay the dues and the fees.
Right.
What do you say to the people, because I've heard the argument, and I'm sure you have as well, that this will attract more people to the state because of not being forced to?
Well, I recommend to people to listen to the two-hour show by Craig Folley this morning on WDET.
Right.
That was from 10 to noon. It should be repeated. I think it's repeated on Friday nights, isn't it?
Yes.
From 6 to 8. You need to listen to that. He had a lot of experts. He had a lot of facts. The other states, and there are 24 of them now, or there will be, I guess, when Michigan goes this way, there is not clear evidence that right to work has given more jobs to anybody. The big state that's had it for a few years, if you look at the facts about Oklahoma,
right,
there isn't a clear advantage for the workers. Either more jobs or higher pay, that's not happening for the workers. Now, and of course the governor is now trying to turn into a freedom for the workers.
Oh, yeah.
Freedom to work.
What
not just
spin.
Right to work,
yes.
But a freedom to work.
Absolutely.
Well, what happens right now, folks, is people can come to a closed shop and they don't have to become union members, but they have to pay the dues. Okay. And why? Is because the union contract, when there is a union contract, even if it's only for 20 workers or what, it covers all the workers there. In other words, you have the benefits of the protection and the bargaining power of the union. They are your representative, whether you want to be part of it or not. They represent you. And you don't have to go to the meetings. You don't have to like them. But do you want that protection or don't you? Do you want the benefits of union bargaining, okay, or don't you? And it seems like there should be no choice here. But unfortunately, only about 20% of the workers in Michigan right now are in unions. In other words, have closed shops.
Right.
And what does that mean? That means that 80% of the people don't know what they're missing. You know, they're benefiting from union contracts elsewhere that are sort of mirrored by their employers, although grudgingly, because union people have these rights and other people might get jealous and so on. And to have some people say, well, if you want to have the right to work wherever you want to work, and if you don't want to pay union dues, fine. But I think that's okay. But you get no coverage. You get no bargaining power. You're there. You're an at-will employee, as far as I'm concerned. If you're not part of that union, you can come or go according to what your employer tells you. I don't think it's fair that people who are not part of unions have any say in the workers' rights. But you say, well, that sounds fair, Cornick. Let's do that. And then maybe only 20% want to be in a union, 80% don't want to pay the dues and just keep working there, even though their jobs are at risk. And they have no legal protection if the employers do something that's unfair to them, either in terms of hours or benefits or early termination. Well, the problem is, with 20%, you can't have a strike.
That's right.
It won't affect the operations of the plant. And striking is the only final and most effective tool. That's what they threaten. That's what all unions have to be able to threaten. That is enough solidarity of their workers that if they won't bargain in good faith, if the employers will not bargain in good faith with them and work out a compromise on the issues. And they're not just money, not just benefits, but also working conditions, okay? Workers' rights in terms of what it takes to fire someone. This you know, is all wrong. I mean, it's just it's not freedom to work. I saw an email today and referred to right to work as right to work for less. That's what's happening, you know. Because if you don't have any bargaining power, if you have no rights, if you're working in a dictatorship, if you will, where the boss, the dictator, can either give you any money he wants to, or you could quit, but how many jobs are out there, right?
That's the point. You're exactly right.
I mean, you don't have other choice. Well, I'll go to somebody that pays me better. Well, where are the jobs? There aren't enough jobs to be competitive like that. And most people have no skills to be competitive. I'm sorry. How many people didn't graduate from high school? Duh, in Detroit? Excuse me? Is it more than 50% that don't graduate? I mean, they don't even have a high school degree, much less a two-year college degree or a four-year degree. You're not even competitive with other people who want a job. There's not enough jobs to go around, okay? That's quite obvious. We have unemployment dropping to 7.7% technically, but that doesn't include the people that have given up work looking for jobs.
Right.
And why have they given up? Because they're not competitive, you know? They don't have the right job skills, but they also don't have the right educational background. They don't have the right resume, if you will, to even be considered for a job over someone else. So this is all backwards. This is all upside down, okay? The country will not work. And all you employers, take note here, all you rich people, I've told you this before, and I guess you're not listening to me. You can't survive if the workers don't survive, okay? Whether they protest, whether they, like in Lansing yesterday, the police in the legislature, in the Capitol building, not only arrested demonstrators saying, oh, the halls are too crowded. Yeah, well, they got videos from inside there. The halls were not crowded at all, okay? They just decided to somehow, like a police state, clamp down on any protest, okay? Anybody coming in, say, anybody comes in, you're not authorized all of a sudden. I mean, the Capitol building, didn't we pay for that? You're not authorized to come in and even peacefully protest. So they pepper sprayed them. There's absolute evidence on that. And they arrested people. And, of course, the Democrats, they could do nothing. They're not in a majority. They walked out once in the House, just not even being there because they knew they couldn't take effect on anything. And once in the Senate, too, the Democrats up and walked out. Because and other bills they voted against, of course. There are just a whole raft of bills here. I made a list. It's overwhelming. It's not just right to work or freedom to work or right to work for less, whatever you want to call it, but three bills that haven't been signed yet, but they'll be passed. Three bills that restrict abortion access. Okay, they've been passed. So I thought people were in favor of abortion rights. I thought that's been decided by the state of Michigan for quite a while. Oh, getting back to that vote, I think majority of people in Michigan want collective bargaining, and they actually know that it's good to have closed shops and the power to stand up to the bosses and to have a voice to speak for you and to negotiate for you. You can't negotiate on your own as one person. You have no power at all if there's not a union there. You are talk about lame ducks. You're a lame duck whose head is going to be chopped off.
Well, why do you think it failed then in November when it was up the ballot proposal?
Collective bargaining?
Mm-hmm.
I think I just said people were afraid of changing the Michigan Constitution.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And,
okay.
And I think
we way. Don't have to worry because our governor, he'd have to sign it into law if it was passed, and he said since he was elected, it's too divisive, I'm not going to support any right-to-work legislation. Well, as of Tuesday, he was getting wishy-washy, and Wednesday he came out and even went on national Fox News to say he's all in favor of it now.
Right.
Okay, and I saw somebody's comment in one of the blogs, patch.com even, about this. Well, remember, he's just a one-term governor. Oh, no, because he did this, he's now got the Republican caucus on his side. He's got the Republican Party of Michigan on his side. He's going to run again. I thought he was priming Callie. I mean, I thought he came in as a smart nerd to do things that needed to be done. Yeah, conservative kind of in a businessman's perspective, certainly. But, you know, he wasn't going to divide the state. He wanted to bring us together. Well, it's not true. Not true now at all. Bye-bye, Governor Snyder, if that's the way you're going to do it. You've now changed your stripes, and I think all the workers of Michigan, all of them, I think they realize what they got now. And I think some people didn't vote for it, Dennis, not only just because of the constitutional amendment thing, but because Snyder said, why is this here?
Right.
I'm not in favor of right to work. I wouldn't sign this legislation. It's too divisive. Michigan is getting along pretty good right now without worrying about it. Yeah, there's hardly any unionists here anyway right now. So, what you know, by the way, the right to work thing and the union shop principle would not apply to police or state troopers.
Interesting.
Interesting exception there. Mm-hmm. Exemption, huh? Teachers. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It kills teachers' unions. Because, you know, those teachers, they're one of the worst things in our society. You don't want educated people.
Right.
No, you don't want to do that. No.
This sarcasm is just flowing today.
Well, it's not sarcasm. I mean, I know teachers both in Dearborn Public Schools and my daughter's schools. They want to get out.
Yeah.
They've never seen such a bad workplace situation. No respect as well as no pay.
Right.
No right to choose, you know, any of their really, any of their curriculum or approaches to teaching anymore. You know, talk about local control. We've got a feature in a few moments, the editorial from Superintendent Brian Winston, which is in the Wednesday,
yeah.
Winston. Because he was on Folly Show yesterday even. Imagine a Dearborn superintendent speaking on a Detroit public radio station about how he feels. Good for you. I didn't know you had courage enough to speak on regional media. I'm not talking about WHFR. We haven't invited you recently, although I think we do have an invitation.
We have a call in, yes.
Now, but good for him at speaking out and writing this editorial. But did he send something around to every household? I don't know. How is he communicating this? What about our Board of Education? They have already denounced the initiatives on education that we were aware of last week. And will probably be also passed and signed into law. This is basically a state takeover of all education, all standards, under not even our State Board of Education, which I thought the State Board of Education actually sets guidelines and principles. They never were able to control the local districts, but I thought they were the centralized body of educators who are now in positions to guide state policy. No, this Education Authority Act, you got a bunch of politicians in there deciding things about education of our students. And you know politicians, especially when they're of only one party, they're going to see the whole world and the advantages in terms of the political benefits for them. Of course they are. And if they don't, they'll be replaced by politicians who will see things that are only advantageous to their party. I don't care whether you have Democrats or Republicans in there. You don't want an education authority. I never heard of such a thing. And Snyder talks about freedom and independent choice. Yeah, state takeover of the schools? I know it's exaggeration, but that's actually what's going to happen here, practically speaking, if that gets passed. Okay, so the anti-abortion, the right to work for less, education initiatives about you can go anywhere with your money, charter, private, online, we can split up your choices.
School choice, yeah.
Whatever you want to do. And that basically opens education up to outside private business.
Right.
And I can imagine, do you really want a private company to be in charge of the education of, say, students across the whole state of Michigan? A private company? Maybe even only through the internet, not even in person? What's a private company going to teach about business and labor laws and union history, I wonder?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. We know how biased they're going to get. And this is the fun one. This will probably be passed shortly, too, where doctors and hospitals can deny coverage not for religious reasons, but for also moral objections.
What would be an example?
Well, I don't want to treat you for your heart problems because you're an alcoholic. And I think that's morally irresponsible to be an alcoholic.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Or you're having an unwanted pregnancy, and that means you're a slut or a prostitute, as Rush Limbaugh would say.
Right.
And I'm against unprotected premarital sex.
Okay.
I have an objection to that. And so, you know, your health care coverage, your insurance, means nothing if the doctors and the hospitals can say, we don't like you morally.
Right.
And that's really vague.
I've been
criticizing Republicans for years. You can't legislate morality. You legislate by example. Like, maybe you're not corrupt. Maybe you're open and fair-minded to all the people of the U.S. Maybe you could lead by example rather than try to pass legislation about morality. And what is morality anyway? I mean, it's a pretty wishy-washy topic.
Sure.
You know, it's very subjective.
But there's certain things
you can't legislate something that's that subjective and have any good benefit. But that's probably going to be passed.
Right.
Now, I think it should be challenged by every lawyer that's possibly able to be, you know, bring that case. But if it's challenged in the state courts of Michigan, guess what political advantage the Republicans have at the state Supreme Court? Yeah, they got their Supreme Court justices re-elected. They got the same majority on the Supreme Court. Okay, the one who retired was a Democrat, and another Democrat replaced that person. But they have the same large majority, and they will follow political lines. Why? Because they get elected based on support from one party or another. That's the only way they have money enough and funds enough to get those TV spots out there, to get their signs up everywhere, in order to get elected to Supreme Court. And God bless them, there's an editorial in Times Herald this week, maybe we have time to read it, where, not Times Herald, but the Livingston Daily Press, mm-hmm. and Argus, has three suggestions for constitutional amendments in Michigan. Where were they 6 months ago?
Right.
Now, how are we going to get a constitutional amendment on something that, first of all, Republicans don't want? Oh, and by the way, if right to work or right to work for less gets passed, that bill has written in that a referendum cannot negate it. Did you ever hear that?
No.
That you can pass a law, the legislature can pass a law, and if the governor signs it into law, they can write it so that the public cannot pass an amendment to negate it. I've never heard of anything before. Is this a democracy? I thought the will of the people, especially by, you know, public vote petition, had the final say. I thought that was the case. Although, of course, you can always have the Supreme Court jump in and say, well, that election is unfair. Or
right.
What they just passed is not constitutional. Well, yeah, of course. So, you know, it goes back to the dominant parties. But the Livingston Daily Press and Argus said one of those constitutional amendments we really need, and they were not hot up, and they, you know, they didn't see a crisis, but they just said, you're talking about constitutional amendments, we really need three. And one of them was, let's get the Supreme Court justices elected in a different way. Also, let's not gerrymander the state in the way we have. I'll come back to that later if I remember in my, you know, let's not get mad, let's get even segment.
All right.
Okay, we're waiting for that. Okay, we have to say this is good, though. Regional Transit Authority for southeastern Michigan
right.
was passed.
Long overdue.
Right. And that's something the Republicans fought for years. They did. And it almost didn't pass because the Democrats were so mad about all these other bills. They walked out. Well, they threatened to walk out and not vote on regional transit, which is crazy because now you see some Republicans are not for regional transit.
Right.
Okay, so they needed all the Democrats to vote for what they already were in favor of. So if the Democrats would have walked out because of everything else that was going on, I mean, no committee hearings, no right to speak for any Democrats on any of these bills. They were just ramrodded right through, not the usual process of going to committee, of hearing committee opinions. They went right through with no discussion and ready for a vote.
It's almost an ambush, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And because they got the majority. They got the majority in House, majority in Senate, and therefore the majority control of all the committees, and they can just go right through. And if the governor says he's going to sign it, fine. But they did get something that was rational. The regional transit authority that I've been talking about has been needed for, oh, I don't know, 10 years, and about 30 years that people who are smart, professors of urban studies, have said this is the only way to go. And when you can look at the other major centers of population in the United States that have already done this sort of regional authority, not just for transit, for other things, it works. It's cheaper to administer. It works. It's the way to go. Well, it did. The bills got passed, and it looks like that'll be signed on Tuesday. So that's the only upside here. The other issues are just so invasive to personal rights and freedom and equity in the workplace, as well as health care. It's shame on you Republicans who voted for that. Shame on you. Shame on you. How can you say you're for the people, all the people? Maybe you know by the last election, the people, at least those who vote, don't agree with you on that, you know.
What do you, and I know it's not up, it's not yet set for legislation, but they're revising the emergency manager law. What did you think of some of those
Well, that's the other issue. The public said, you can go back to the first emergency manager law, in effect. We don't like this one that gives the state of Michigan, any time it says it wants to move in and take over a government, a state government, a city government, that, you know, you don't have to even prove financial insolvency.
No.
And so the governor said, well, you know, maybe we can just now pass a few little bills to tweak the old law.
Right.
Yeah, but I haven't read the extent of the tweaks, but it sounds like they're going to tweak the old bill to, in effect, be pretty much like the one that the voters said we don't want.
And the only major difference in what I could see is that they're not going to allow them to dissolve the union contracts, which is kind of funny in light of the right to work passage. You know what I mean? So there may not be any worries about union contracts when this comes around. I don't know. They're giving each community a choice to choose one of four options. They can go into bankruptcy. They can actually ask for the emergency manager. And there are choices now. And then they're saying they're going to give a lot more power to the administration, of, you know, the mayor and the elected body. So there's some progress there. I just don't know how much.
Yeah, it looks like Detroit is either officially going to go into bankruptcy shortly because the mayor and the city council can't agree on anything.
It's a mess.
So the state is going to have to move in there. And I understand in this situation, who else is there to help out?
That's true.
Our major metropolis here, what's left of it anyway.
But what are they going to do with the schools? Because that is a whole separate issue, isn't it?
They got their separate emergency manager.
Right, but I mean, but it's not. There's no progress. They're closing the schools. I know that they think that's progress.
There's no significant progress. Of course, they have to close a few. I mean, populations dropped from 1.3 million 10 years ago to 700,000. I thought it was 800,000. And all of a sudden, I hear Mayor Bing last week say 700,000. Whoa, 100,000 people also. Where did they go? Poof, in the last year?
No.
Oh, my goodness. A lot of room for community farms now.
A lot of room.
Okay, just got to remove some of the derelict buildings.
That's right.
There has to be a whole new plan for Detroit, obviously. This is not a Democrat or Republican thing. The state has to do something. All of us are responsible for that, all of us in the state of Michigan. It's like if there was a natural disaster only in Detroit, wouldn't the legislature give emergency aid, you know, beds, blankets, fire, food, water, you know? I mean, they would come to their aid. Well, the state has to do that at times to the extent of their resources for cities that get themselves in this kind of financial mess. And that, you know, it's just something they have to do. And so I know they're going to do that, but I don't want that law or anything close to the law that was now voted out by the people, which allowed them, just because the governor felt like it, he could go and say, I don't think you're doing the right job. We're going to take over your city indefinitely with my own person. No contracts are respected. No elected officials will be listened to. That's like dictatorship. That's total dictatorship. And there's no end in sight to that.
No,
there's no end in sight. Even Grand Rapids, Benton Harbor is still under that. Was it 8 years now of a total state-controlled dictatorship? And all that's happened? Is it a luxury resort for rich people was built there that wasn't there before, so that a few of the people in Benton Harbor can work for minimum wage, cleaning toilets and cutting the grass? I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me to foster dictatorships. I mean, That's not America.
No.
That's not what democracy is about. That's totally the wrong way to go. I know if you have a big problem, you know, like in the 1930s, everybody loved in Italy, in the early 30s, Mussolini, Benito Mussolini. Oh, well, let's give him complete power. He made the trains run on time. Oh, yeah. You want to sacrifice your rights? Okay. He made the trains run on time because, as a dictator, he could threaten the engineers with murder. He could just arrest them and kill them if they didn't get the trains there on time. That's a heck of a motivation.
Yeah, it is.
But what about his priorities? His priorities were, oh, let's have a little war in Ethiopia. Ethiopia? I mean, they've got spears and rocks. So he took the whole Italian army in there in the 30s and killed them, killed all their armies. And Ethiopia's not even next to Italy. It's in Africa, you know, way down southeast in Africa. And I can't remember his excuse, but how ridiculous can you get? He just wanted to show, oh, he had a military. He had people that knew how to shoot guns, you know, and they could take positive, relentless positive action. Crazy. And Italians went to die, to kill mostly unarmed, unthreatening Ethiopians? What in the world? See, that you get a dictator, you don't know what they're going to do.
Well, and for the people that say,
and
well,
you have no rights to even suggest what they're going to do.
It's only for the communities that are, you know, like the Benton Harbors and the Pontiacs and the Flints that are, and they're very poor communities. What about Allen Park? I mean, Allen Park, yes, they had a major debacle with the Unity Studios.
Well, and if the old law, if the last emergency management law hadn't been voted down, the Governor Snyder said, oh, yeah, we'll be in there in January.
That's right.
You don't have to go bankrupt. You're just, you're going to die. And you know, as a city. And it's true. They're in deep financial problems. They'll probably go bankrupt soon, and it will trigger the last emergency manager law to happen. And that's probably going to happen. Again, when property values go down, if that's the essence of your fundraising for your city, then you have no money to pay the bills. You have no money to keep people hired for city services. What are you going to do there? You know, everything becomes desperate. And what's the answer? Have one dictator for all of Michigan? And then what happens when Michigan goes under? Well, then you need a dictator in Washington, D.C., don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a cascading affair here. If you have all these cities that are bankrupt, eventually the state of Michigan will be bankrupt. Then the federal government will have to take over. And I don't think I can't believe Republicans want to go that way. Again, it's very frustrating. Tea Party people are basically against some of these reforms, but not all of them. It's very disturbing. And it has been announced that there will be a protest in Lansing. If you're interested in getting arrested and or pepper sprayed, it's going to be a peaceful demonstration. But you know. That's not the way the security police around the Capitol are going to see it. They're going to make their excuses, and it does, you know. And yes, they will lie if they're told to. Sure, they will. Yeah, because who pays their salaries? It's a terrible situation in Michigan. And let's listen. I've got some ideas on that, but let's listen to Jim Hightower now. It's about half past the hour, a little past half past. And Hightower has some comments about the crazy stuff happening nationally. It has to do with the fiscal cliff, too. So I know you're all excited about that. Here we go. Jim Hightower, WHFR.FM, station making waves.
In the scramble to fix the federal deficit, one of Washington's worst ideas is widely considered by political elites, including some Democrats, to be a good idea, even a painless fix. The idea is to raise the age of eligibility for both Social Security and Medicare, shoving it from 65 to 67 or beyond. After all, goes Washington's conventional wisdom, people live so much longer now, so it won't hurt to postpone eligibility and save a couple of years of taxpayer outlays to people. But, as economist and columnist Paul Krugman has pointed out, this bit of conventional wisdom is merely conventional in the sense of trite. While life expectancy has gone up on average, it has not increased much for working stiffs, especially tens of millions of lower-wage and poor workers. Unlike being a member of Congress, the work that these people do tends to require heavy lifting, which can make you old fast. Requiring them to do it even deeper into old age and to wait longer for medical assistance is, as Krugman bluntly calls it, cruel. Bear in mind, too, that working-class families are precisely the people who count on Social Security and Medicare. They don't have the socialized medical benefits and golden pensions that those pampered conventional wisdom spouters in Congress get. Oh, one more thing. The purported savings from this fix are so minimal as to be illusory. In fact, shoving ill or crippled elderly workers out of the cost-effective Medicare system will jack up America's health care costs. This is Jim Hightower saying, so raising the retirement age is gratuitous as well as cruel, but mostly it's severely ignorant. What's at work here is a policy-making elite that includes no working-class people, so it can cluelessly believe that making the lives of these Americans worse is painless.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
John Boehner is in a hot huff, fuming so furiously that he'd be red-faced were it not for that eerie orange-toned tan that he constantly has. The Republican House Speaker is angry that President Obama won't play Boehner ball with him in their ongoing altercation over ways to reduce the federal deficit. The GOP leader's pitch to Obama is that the deficit hole should be filled by cutting government spending and eliminating some tax deductions, not, most emphatically not, by increasing taxes on corporations and the rich, even by so little as a dime. But this is an EFUS pitch, a soccer ball. The trick is that Boehner and company want Democrats and the general public to agree to massive cuts without telling us which programs and deductions they would sacrifice. So far, Obama is refusing to go for this game of Boehner ball, instead standing firm and calmly saying to him, if you want to spare the rich any burden and only cut back on regular folks, don't expect me to do your dirty work for you. Make your pitch and take political responsibility for the pain you would cause. Oh, the huffing and puffing that ensued. We've put a serious offer on the table, wailed Boehner to the right-wing friendlies interviewing him on Fox TV. Only he hadn't. Not one specific cut had been named. So Obama still refused to be suckered into playing Boehner's game. This is Jim Hightower saying, with polls showing rising public scorn for his pitiful performance, Boehner has finally been forced to try another pitch. But even with a do-over, he balked. His latest proposal cuts $1.2 trillion from federal programs and eliminates $800 billion in tax exemptions, but still doesn't tell us which ones. As Casey Stengel asked the players of a terrible ball club he once managed, can't anyone here play this game?
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
This is Jay Koronek, along with Dennis Reimars here, the WHFR Journal from Henry Ford Community College. Local news and alternative views, WHFR.fm, the station making waves. And boy, we're really looking at a lot of people and issues that have made waves this week, primarily the lame duck session in Lansing. But here, locally, there is, of course, the dispute about, well, one of the proposals in Lansing is for basically a takeover. I think, I know it's an exaggeration, I know it is, but I see it as a takeover of local control of the schools. And here is an open letter to residents of the Dearborn Public Schools from Superintendent Brian Whiston. Okay? Makes several points here. So point number one, 26 consecutive years of increased enrollment. Point number two, graduation rate in Dearborn up 6%. Point number three, five schools in Dearborn recognized by the state as beating the odds. Okay, I guess we had the odds against us, so we beat the odds in terms of educational standards. Point number four, continuous improvement on local and state tests. Number five, a five-year program has been established in the Dearborn Public Schools, allowing students to graduate with both a high school diploma and a two-year college degree at no cost to parents. But what's the interesting insight into that one,
Well,
Dennis?
In another story in the Press and Guide, they say the headline reads, few likely to qualify for early college at DPS. And the number, this is astounding. To participate in this program, students need to qualify in all three areas of a pre-ACT test given in 10th grade, and those three areas include English, math, and reading. Mm-hmm. Of the current 10th graders who took the Explore test last school year, only 172 out of 1,686 qualified in all three sections. That's 10%. It's not even 10%. It's a little over 10%.
Right. Well, that's because, in a way, they are the five-year program, which also gets them a college degree, they have to be sort of ready for. I mean, we're trying to look at them a couple years before they would actually start taking the college classes.
Mm-hmm.
But this would be automatic admission. And if they're not ready for college work or have a good possibility in a couple of years of being ready for mm-hmm. college work, they can't get into the program. So, I mean, I'm all in favor of the program, but it's true. You can't let people in who are going to fail. You know, but then again, what does it say about the quality of Dearborn Public Schools if only 10% qualify for this program, which is oh so essential? I mean, these days, folks, if you don't have a college degree in something and have excelled in your studies in those degrees, your employment future, your usefulness to society is very minimal, okay? And that's why some people say, well, I won't even go to college because I couldn't pass. Yeah, well, whose fault is that? Is that yours? Is that the fault of the K-12 system where you are? Is that the fault of your family that didn't give you enough encouragement, that said negative things about teachers and schools because maybe they didn't do so well and for many reasons? So unfortunately, I mean, it's good we have it.
It's an awesome opportunity. Yeah, the money savings and
for
everything.
For no extra cost.
That's
now,
right.
Of course, tuition to Henry Ford Community College for Dearborn residents.
$74, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty inexpensive anyway. But
right. But that's not the point. And you, like you said, are they ready? And then they have to take into consideration, this is also was in a previous article, not just can you pass the test, but are they mature enough? Because there's a lot that's right. on the student to do themselves.
Yes.
They have to be motivated.
Right, yeah. Point six from Brian Whiston, Superintendent of Dearborn Public Schools. Students earning millions of dollars in scholarship each year to go to college.
That's right.
So
there is so much.
A few students, the best from Dearborn, are good enough to get financial support, to get to good four-year schools.
That's right.
And well, even here, people need scholarship aid to come to Henry Ford Community College. And
right.
So some of them are coming here with scholarship aid probably too. District-wide response is point seven, to bullying and positive behavior programs ensure a safe learning environment. Yeah, they've really beat that issue to death, haven't they?
Yeah.
The bullying issue. Choices of
students. Sorry to hear that, folks.
Choices of for students, this is point eight or nine. They don't have them numbered, so I'm losing count here. Include magnet programs. I love magnets.
Yeah.
I always love to play with magnets.
Yeah, I'm attracted to them too.
Early college program, the STEM program. I don't know what that is. STEM. AP, that's advanced placement courses in college. I know about that. And mm-hmm. dual enrollment possibilities.
Great.
Well, anyway, Whiston gets to his point here. Does this sound like a school district that needs to be overhauled, reformed, and taken over by a state-controlled board? He says, I don't think so. But obviously, some legislators in Lansing do. I'm sure George Duraney doesn't, but because he's our Dearborn area mm-hmm. representative to the House, but he's a Democrat. So
he has no say.
No, he has no say, and they won't, as he said last year to us, they won't even call on him, even though he's on the Education Committee.
That's interesting.
Because the Republicans control it. Why listen to a Democrat?
Sure.
They're not going to agree with you, are they? And they might not. They can't have a good idea that could even help your bill. Could they? Of course not. They're a Democrat. And so he's been shut out. And he said, well, we should elect a Republican then. Yeah. What? To side with anti-school, anti-local control issues? So Whiston goes on, if two bills, House Bill 6004 and Senate Bill 1358, currently sitting before lawmakers in Lansing, are passed in the next few weeks, and I personally will guarantee you folks they will be passed, because the lame ducks up there are on a roll. School districts in the state could face drastic change that will have a devastating impact on your child's school. This is your superintendent right here in Dearborn saying this, folks. Okay? I've never heard him speak so strongly about
Absolutely.
Anything
right.
in his tenure here. He goes on to say, these bills shift control away from local school board trustees that you elect and give a great deal of power to a single statewide school district known as the Education Achievement Authority that is accountable only to a board appointed by the governor, not elected by the people. And it's not even, as I said, it's not even the State Board of Ed that actually has some educators on it.
Right.
Okay. Even more troubling about these proposed changes is that the important job of educating children will be turned over to for-profit operators. Okay. Now, education for profit. And you know, if they got to have a profit, somebody's going to get shortchanged on the user side, you know, on the student side. It's going to happen that way, right? Somebody, because they got to make a profit. But oh boy. Anyway, these for-profit operators can pick and choose the children that they want to allow in their schools. We are fortunate, he says, that our representatives in Lansing, Representative George Moraney, Representative David Nathan, and Senator Morris Hood, Democrat Morris Hood from Detroit area, understand how wrong these proposals are, and they need our support. We need to contact our representatives in Lansing and let them know that HB 6004 and SB 1358 must not be approved. I'm sure they know. I know how they're voting. That's not going to help, folks. These are going to be approved. I've got an answer, which I'll tell you in 5 minutes. It is vitally important, he says, that we take action now to make sure these bills are not passed before the legislators leave for the year. Yeah, you want to go up and protest in Lansing, 9 a.m., Capitol steps, Tuesday morning, next week, the 11th. Go ahead. It is important to share your own personal concerns about this legislation. On our district website, www.dearbornschools.org, we've placed key points that you may want to include in your correspondence, and we have provided names and addresses of our legislators. You can find out more information on this legislation by visiting miparentsforschools.org. That's miparentsforschools.org. And it concludes, despite the many challenges we face, our district has made a great deal of progress and has had plenty of student success. This success can be attributed to the hard work and dedication of our staff. I want to thank all of our staff members and our parents for making student achievement a priority and believing that each child can have academic success in our classrooms. We are also very fortunate to have a supportive and knowledgeable Board of Education that understands the needs of the children in our schools. I urge you to take action today and make sure that this legislation is not passed. What can you do? You can write letters. You can send emails. Who should you send them to? Oh, everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, the governor, even Republicans who aren't from this area. Of course, the Democrats, they'd like to have some numbers, but if they're not allowed to speak, it can't even say, I have 20,000 people that are against it. They won't even be heard saying the numbers, so it really won't matter that much. And, of course, Amy Blackburn and other Board of Trustee members have spoken out against this. It's not just your superintendent, Brian Whiston, that's going a little off the beam here and getting involved in, statewide politics. This is a major threat to education in every local district in Michigan. It's just totally the wrong thing to do. It's dictatorship, folks, just like the second emergency manager law. It is so dangerous. It's so threatening. It has to be resisted in every way possible. Now, the one thing we'll say about the schools, and that's why they have another issue, another problem, and that is the moving into the new city hall.
Right.
Should they or shouldn't they? The Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. has invited them in. New city hall will happen. It is a done deal. Of course, the selling of the old city hall is not a done deal yet. So the city may have a little vacant building. Maybe they can put the administrators in the old city hall. No, I'm just kidding.
But Whiston was in the news based on this as well because he decided against this for now.
Right. Well, and the board talked about this. They said, at this time, we're going to let the council-appointed group that's going to look at the actual costs to the city and therefore what's the city going to charge the Dearborn Public Schools in order to make a decision. We have to make a decision based on the reality of what the costs are going to be for the move. They are thinking of selling Howell School, and I don't know why.
Because of the lack of
Enrollment?
Enrollment, and it's in a really prime location. Isn't that across from Oakwood Hospital? And I think Oakwood wants to
buy it. Oh, is that how? Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Oh,
and I believe that it would work really well. So, I mean, it's not like one of the – we were talking about it last week. What would a private company do?
But you know, the Michigan Education Authority, if established, they will decide what to do with vacant buildings.
Exactly.
The city can't just the school district can't just decide to sell it to whoever they want to for a profit. Probably the state of Michigan will get the profit or something from it. Maybe they'll sell it to a private company. You know.
Well, as part of the decision with Whiston, I'm sure they're looking at what it's going to cost to fix the Tenet building. Where
right,
they're
of
at
course,
now. That's
of course,
could
yeah.
be expensive.
And yeah, that's it. But they also a few of them, like Hussein Berry, is quoted at the end of that story. By saying that, well, you know, and I'm doing an ironic tone of voice here because he sounds really namby-pamby about this, you know, we don't want to necessarily get involved in this whole backlash on the new City Hall issue, so we want to stay out of it. Yeah, because they need extra money. There, not only is there a millage renewal coming up for Henry Ford Community College next November, it's been stated in the paper, the Board of Ed now has said we're probably going to need either a sinking bond fund, which always sounds depressing to
me.
It
does. Oh,
sinking. Get a sinking feeling about that. or an actual bond. And when would they bring it about? In the next November election. And what else is happening locally in next November's election?
A race for mayor?
The race for mayor.
That's
and
interesting.
And, of course, you know who's ever going to run against the mayor, whoever it is, Tefelsky, you know, or whoever. They're going to bring up how selling City Hall was a bad idea. Or trying to sell it, or buying the new City Hall was a bad idea,
right.
at least.
And he voted against
Maybe
it.
By then the old City Hall will actually be officially bought by the ArtServe people,
right.
and that can't be a campaign issue if it's already sold. But just moving into the new City Hall is going to cost a lot of money, and a lot of people feel that, oh, we just passed an increase in millage for the city to raise more money, and here they turn around and spend $3 million on a new City Hall, which is probably going to cost $5 or $6 million with renovations that will be required. And of course, the mayor says, hey, come on, you know, the improvements on the old City Hall are going to cost more than that if we had to stay.
Exactly.
So that's not, it's a trade-off for the better. But I do think it's risky, although they didn't know how long that old ADP building or that new ADP building that was up for sale would stay for sale at that low price.
Right.
Otherwise, sure, due diligence would have meant, sell the City Hall first and then find the next best building. But it, you know, right on Michigan Avenue, relatively modern looking, energy efficient, at least compared to the old City Hall. I can understand how, you know, if you're very practical and realistic about it, buying the new City Hall at that time, even though you haven't sold old City Hall, still made good sense. A lot of people don't agree, but nonetheless, I can understand the mayor's logic on that, and I think it'll probably work out somehow. It'll work out better if the Dearborn Public Schools were able to pay part of the rent, you know, and it might even save them money, too, depending on what happens to Tenike. Oh, my gosh. Okay.
It's I want to hear your answer.
Yeah, it's 5 minutes, too. Well, you know, don't get mad if you're frustrated by this. Get even, as I say. And you say, well, how can I get even? You've already indicated that letters, email to my elected representatives and other representatives and the governor are going to fall on deaf ears. Right. It's a power play. Right. They can do it. They got the votes. They're going to do it because they are doctrinaire Republican Party people who are actually mad. They're getting even for Obama getting elected. That's what I suggest. And they know, hey, look, if we can do this statewide, we'll do it. You know, they already rejected the locally controlled health exchange.
Right.
They rejected it. And that's even,
there's
even
about
a comment,
it's
an editorial in Press and Guide, and said, what are they doing? I thought, and just like I said, rather Republicans are in favor of local control. They're going to let the federal government do it rather than set up our own board. No, they don't want to support that stuff, that Obamacare at all in any way. Well, it's going to be imposed on us, and then the federal government gets to play dictator over that health exchange. It's still going to be there. So that's the craziest thing, but it's doctrinaire politics, right? It doesn't make any sense, but it's a power play. You know, you don't like them, you don't do anything that looks like you're agreeing with them.
It's almost like pouting.
That's it. There's no real evidence that any of these changes, except for the Regional Transit Authority, are needed in Michigan.
Right.
There's no hue and cry from the masses that any of these things are needed in Michigan. We want more health care. We want better better government services. But to give up all rights and freedoms and to go this direction is crazy. You can go and physically protest peacefully and then maybe get arrested anyway, or somewhat militantly, intending to get arrested. You know, intending to get arrested doesn't mean you've done something violent. Just means you step across a line.
Sure.
And then you go quietly and peacefully to jail. And, of course, your example means something to other people. Not that you became a martyr. I think you had to die to become a martyr,
pretty
right?
Pretty sure.
Yeah. That's going a little far because it'll be the last event you can stand right up for in your life
you
because you'll be dead afterwards.
You want to live to protest another
day. But a lot of people, nonviolent civil disobedience, it's called, folks. It worked for the Indians against the British Empire. And as Henry David Thoreau said, who had to spend one night in jail for protesting the poll tax, the tax in Massachusetts at the time in the 19th century, that you had to pay because you could vote. He wasn't in favor of that. So they threw him in jail, and that was a protest. And he felt that sometimes you've got to use your body to stop the machine. And that's, of course, a metaphor. He's not saying that literally, but sometimes you have to do that. But, you know, the media doesn't really cover that. Or they cover how they cover it. They cover, oh, those violent, unruly, unwashed masses, how dare they obstruct our beautiful legislators who have nice suits and are rich. How dare they slow the motion of their dictatorial acting representatives. No, I think the answer is, in this case, something we can do, but it's going to take until the next election, is we have to get a Democratic governor elected or a Green Party governor. We have to get a governor that's going to fight the majority. You say, well, why don't we, you know, get more Democrats in the House and the Senate? We can't, because the Republicans have gerrymandered the state so that actually where the majority of people live, you don't have the right to choose the people you want to choose, primarily Democrats. The majority of Michigan are Democrats. I think they elected Snyder because they thought he'd be a moderate and better than the Democratic administration, since they didn't look successful after 8 years of Granholm's efforts. And the economy kept getting worse and worse, and she couldn't do anything about it, even though she had a Republican legislature. So I suggest start a major campaign to make sure that Governor Snyder is not reelected if he runs, and if some other Republican tries to run, you don't vote for them either. You get somebody other than a Republican in there in order to balance the Republican majorities, which are unfair majorities. You know, I think they're patently illegal. Oh, did I mention that the Livingston Press Daily and Argus also say, we've got to get rid of this crazy gerrymandering. It's not democratic. When you split the state of Michigan up into these districts where Republicans, even if they're in the majority for the whole city, but the Republicans that are in that area get to elect the representative, because you divide the Democrat and Republican electorate in a way that the Republicans get an almost guaranteed majority for the rest of our lives until the next gerrymandering. But who's going to pass a constitutional amendment like this? The legislature, controlled by Republicans? No, they like the gerrymandering the way it is. It guarantees that they will stay elected. So if we can't change the gerrymandering, we can't, here in Flint and Detroit and the big metro areas that vote solidly Democratic, in majority case Democratic, then we have to make sure that Governor Snyder is not the dictator in there that he is now, that he's clearly shown that he's not in favor of moderation. Now, there's no way out of this, Governor Snyder. You've done it. You lied to us up to that last election, and now you want to consolidate all the Republican support. You want to run again. I know you want to run again for governor, and we're not going to support that, whether it's union people,